VSiN Weekend Morning Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number three of the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. I'm Tim Murray, live from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. About 2 hours from now, the final round will start for the leaders of the U.S. Open. Sam Burns scheduled to begin his round at 2:15 Eastern time, as is Adam Scott. That'll be your final pairing today. Also, J.J. Spahn and Victor Hovland will get out on the course. An overcast day, it looks like, there in Oakmont, Pennsylvania, just outside Pittsburgh. And Victor Hovland at 6-1, J.J. Spahn at +350. Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll continue our discussion regarding the College World Series. Two more games today. The big one last night, LSU puts themselves in the driver's seat to win their second title in 3 years as they get a 4-1 win over Arkansas and moving Arkansas into the loser's bracket. Arkansas now 6-1 to win the College World Series. Matt Grissom live from Omaha, who, we've had an Arkansas fan on the show in Colin Wilson. We had an LSU backer in Jimmy Ott. We're going to have another Arkansas guy in Matt Grissom join us here in just a little bit live from Omaha. And then bottom of the hour, we'll talk to JVT. Not only are we going to talk Game 5 of the NBA Finals, but we're also going to talk the blockbuster trade that unfolded early this morning as the Memphis Grizzlies have shipped Desmond Bane to the Orlando Magic in exchange for 4 first-round picks, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and Cole Anthony. Question just real quick to ponder. Does this mean that someone like Ja Morant could be on the market, or is this a rebuild on the fly around Ja Morant? So the Grizzlies, a team that, yes, they were the 7th seed a year ago, actually 8th seed, right? In the Western Conference, but not that far removed from the top portion of the Western Conference standings. The Grizzlies were 48-34, were the 8th seed, lost and got swept by the Thunder, but they were also only 2 games back of the 3 seed in the Los Angeles Lakers. So what does this mean for the Grizzlies moving forward? And what does it mean for the Orlando Magic, a team that we knew would be aggressive? Their president, James Weltman, made it clear, as Shams Charania points out in his article, that they were going to be aggressive this offseason, a win-now approach. And now you've got a core of Paolo, Franz Wagner, Jalen Suggs, and Desmond Bane, one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA. Was the price too expensive to pay? I guess time will tell with those 4 picks. 16th overall pick this year goes to the Memphis Grizzlies. The Phoenix Suns pick next year, an unprotected 2028 and an unprotected 2030 from the Orlando Magic. So the Magic aggressive, go out, get Desmond Bane, who last year averaged 19-6-5. And since he got to Memphis has been really consistent, averaging 18, a little under 4, or a little under 5 rebounds and 4 assists. So we will get the thoughts of this a little bit more in depth when JBT jumps on the program coming up at the bottom of the hour. More NBA Finals thoughts as well. But I did want to hit this as we get ready for the final round of the U.S. Open. Sam Burns, the leader at 4-under. Adam Scott at 3-under. Your first round leader was J.J. Spahn. And J.J. Spahn, I think most of us anticipated after he shot that 4-under on Monday, all right, out of sight, out of mind, get out of the way. But he's hung around, right? He did wrap up the round yesterday with a bogey, but J.J. Spahn heading into the final round, what is his mindset? Let's hear from J.J. Spahn, just one back of the pace heading into the final round of the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I'm just happy I'm still, within shouting distance going into tomorrow. 18 is just a tough hole. Kind of if you're out of position, I was already lucky to have a clean lie, somewhat of a clean lie on the second shot. But, bogeys happen at Oakmont, and, I still got 18 holes tomorrow. I think it's pretty close to the players earlier this year when I was leading after 3 rounds. So, if you want to sum it up, yeah, this is the best I've played, in my career for sure.
Have you proved something to yourself with how you've held tough in both of those situations?
Yeah, I'm trying to just let the course come to me. You know, I'm not putting too much pressure. And I think it's easy to not have the expectations out at a US Open, especially like Oakmont, to have to feel like you got to get everything up and down or convert. So I'm just kind of like, okay, if I make a bogey, I make a bogey. You know, everybody's making bogeys. And I think the key is not making double bogeys. So yeah, the grit that I'm showing this week has kind of went along well with that mentality of just kind of plugging along and taking what the course gives me.
AJ Spawn mentioned the Players Championship when he lost in a three-hole aggregate playoff to Rory McIlroy earlier this year. He has one win to his name at the Valero Texas Open back in April of 2022. And JJ Spahn will be in the second-to-last group with Victor Hovland. He is around plus 360 to win the U.S. Open today. JJ Spahn actually plus 350 as he heads in today, tied for second. Mention this note, we'll pass it across again. Sam Burns, this courtesy of Justin Ray, leads by one with 18 holes to play at the U.S. Open. All-time players with a one-shot lead through 54 holes at this championship have won 32% of the time, 14 of 44 across all majors the last 40 years, players win at a 42% rate with a one-shot lead after 54 holes. So Sam Burns, your leader, heading into the final round of the U.S. Open. We heard from Wes Reynolds, and he said of the four that are currently under par, the one that he would look at from a betting standpoint heading into the final round would be Victor Hovland. And I went ahead and took a little nibble at 6-1 on Victor Hovland to win the U.S. Open. So final round is underway, coverage as well, and we will see the four top golfers hit the course in about 2 hours from now. Back on the hardwood tomorrow night, we get game five of the NBA Finals. The Indiana Pacers, a double-digit lead late in the third quarter, and they got pacered, right? This is the team that's been coming back against all of their opponents, including the Oklahoma City Thunder in game one. And they're the one that let this lead slip out of their fingertips on Friday night as the Thunder outscored the Pacers 31-17. They clamped down defensively in that game. And now the question is, all right, how does the Indiana Pacers respond to this victory, to this loss coming up on Monday night? Pascal Siakam following the game four loss on their mindset heading into tomorrow night.
Yeah, well, we gotta go out there. I mean, we've won some games on the road before, so I think we just gotta go out there with our confidence. Continue to, like I said, we watched what we did wrong and trying to get better at those things. And at the end of it, you know, like we just gotta go out there and again do things that we've done in the past. And so we have that confidence that we can do it. So it's gonna take a lot and it's gonna be hard, but I think, you know, we have the group capable of doing that.
These NBA Finals have been so fun to watch. And the zigzag has come home in all of these games. And now the Pacers head back to Oklahoma City. Game one, they were able to snag. Game two was a spot that I think most of us expected a pretty strong performance from a desperate Oklahoma City bunch. We got that. Game three, it looked like a hornet's nest, and it was really impressive to watch the Pacers take game three. I didn't know what to expect in game four. I ultimately did play a first half bet at -3.5 on the Thunder. That did not come home. But as that game went on into the third quarter, I sat there watching that and I said, you know, I feel like the Pacers are outplaying them. They're outworking them. They're putting the pressure on them, guarding them 94 feet. But the thing that jumped out to me and the chess move that I thought was pretty impressive from Dagnall was the fact that SGA got a little rest in the first quarter. He typically plays all 12 minutes in the first quarter. He was not bringing the ball up every single possession because in game three, you could tell that SGA was gassed. And with Jalen Williams bringing the ball up a little bit more in game three, it did feel like SGA had a little bit of that gas in the tank. So now they made that move in game four. What do the Pacers do to counter in game five? Also worth noting this, SGA finished up with zero assists in that one. So do we look at SGA to get back to the facilitating, or is this going to be more of the norm for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? I'm going to ask this to JVT, because we tend to do the, you know, the buy low spots. And maybe this total is a buy low spot, right? At 224 after the under came home in the most recent game. But I'm curious about SGA's assists, because in this series, he had three assists in game one. He had eight in game two, three in game three, and zero in game four. Did the Thunder see what they liked and they think will continue to work? Having SGA maybe play a little bit more off ball? And do we think SGA will continue to not facilitate as much? Is under 6.5 worth a look, or is this too much of a market correction? That's always what you got to contemplate looking at these player props. But coming off of three assists in game three, zero in game four, do we look at under 6.5 assists in game five tomorrow night? We'll ask that to JVT in less than 20 minutes from now. Also get his thoughts on the blockbuster trade as Desmond Bain headed to the Orlando Magic from the Memphis Grizzlies. But two more games in Omaha today. Boots on the ground from our guy Matt Grissom, and he'll join us next right here on the VSIN Weekend Morning Line.
You're tuned in to the VSIN Weekend Morning Line.
Keep it rolling here on a Sunday morning. Happy Father's Day to all. Tim Murray live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Game five of the NBA Finals tomorrow night back in Oklahoma City. Jonathan Von Tobel will join us in less than 15 minutes. We'll also get his thoughts on the big blockbuster trade this morning. Desmond Bane on the move to Orlando. I was texting with my buddy Jeffrey Wright, host of host on 92.9 ESPN in Memphis, and he said, quote, "I think it's kind of what you had to do. Also, that's a low-key haul for a return looking at the Memphis Grizzlies." So feeling like this was a move in his eyes maybe to make another move potentially for the Memphis Grizzlies, but he said they realized that you can't have three players on that big of deals. So Desmond Bane on the move to the Orlando Magic. What does that mean for the Magic moving forward? Once again, JVT coming up here in just a little bit. But we've had great coverage of the College World Series. We were live at Rocco's on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday morning, just a stone's throw away from Charles Schwab Field. No surprise, the LSU folks are showing up and drinking their fair share of Jello shots. And maybe our next guest had a couple of Jello shots to ease the pain of his Arkansas Razorbacks as they fell last night 4-1 to the LSU Tigers. You know, I'll ask the same question, Matt, that I asked this to Colin Wilson as Matt Grissom joins us courtesy of our Progressive Guest Line. Is we were all wondering, and I asked you this question as well, the loser of LSU Arkansas, would they be a team that you'd look at to bet once they got into the loser's bracket? So Arkansas now around 6-1 to win the title. Did last night worry you about what you saw from the Razorbacks? Would you look to back them at that adjusted price of around 6-1 after losing last night to LSU?
Oh, that's actually what I thought would happen. I wrote that up for Bill's newsletter, but I thought it would be at the hands of Anthony Einson instead of Cade Anderson. But at the end of the day, you're going to get Anderson and Einson out of the way. Had we lost 4-1 to Einson, I would have said, yeah, this is exactly what I thought. Now, the one thing that does concern me is Arkansas's bats could not wake up. You saw the one home run by Reese Robinette. You saw a couple singles by the leadoff guy, Charles Davlin. But we didn't do enough, and I think that's more evident of the domination that Cade Anderson had on the mound. I think he had, what, 9 strikeouts. So it's really tough to score when you're facing one of the country's best arms. And then the post-game press conference, Dave Van Horn, it was just kind of somber. but still confident. So I said it in the guide, the newsletter, that I like Arkansas's pitching depth, and I would back them if they lose game one, which if they pitched Anthony Einson, I thought they would. So different, same result, but different mechanism of getting here. So yeah, I like the Razorbacks plus 600.
Matt Grissom joining us here, courtesy of our Progressive Guest Line. He's there in Omaha. He's taking in all the action for VSIN and College Baseball Insiders. Follow him on social media at Grissom on X. So let's get to today's games. I want to start with the nightcap, the game in the winner's bracket, Coastal Carolina and Oregon State. We've had a lot of Coastal love on the show today, both from Colin Wilson, Jimmy Ott, both looking at them as a team that, you know, you had a great opportunity, whether it have been in the Super Regionals or even before the start of the College World Series, to back Coastal in the futures market. That number has shrunk as they now sit here 1-0 after the win in game number one. What do you make of Coastal Carolina, Oregon State tonight? Total sits at 9. Coastal around a minus 130 favorite or so. Do you like the Chanticleers to continue their red hot run where they haven't lost a game since mid-April?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to back to go up against a team with 24 straight. But I played Oregon State on the run line. I think this is going to be another tight game. You've got Ethan Kleinschmidt, who on the year has got a 3.24 ERA. You've got Jacob Morrison for Coastal, 2.15. Both of their advanced analytics are good. And we've seen Coastal kind of struggle to swing the bat sometimes. And I think every game's gone under except for that first one, which ended up kind of being a fluke that it did, because it could have ended 5-4. If you just catch an out. But I really like this game to stay tight. So the plus 1.5, I can't go all in on the Beavers, although our website does project them to be plus 104. So there's some value there in the 110, 115, whatever they are. But yeah, Coastal is a train right now, and I don't want to step in front of it, but I will toe the line with the run line.
There you go. Taking the
Coastal Carolina players are walking in behind me. So I better watch my mouth.
Yeah, don't talk too much smack about the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers as they walk in there. Charles,
I got to give it up to them. They've traveled well. Their fans are great. Met Kevin Schnall, the head coach. They happen to be staying at the same hotel. So easy access. We've met the center fielder that played for that 2016 team that won it all. So just great people, great opportunity to get to know the Chanticleers.
They got the juju going, man. Once they get to Omaha, all they do is win. That's all they know, right, Matt? As you mentioned, 2016, they go out there, they get the title, and now off to a 1-0 start, and they've got Oregon State tonight. Should be a fun one there. Oregon State knows a thing or two about winning national championships as well in their trips to Omaha. What about the loser's bracket, Matt, today? We've got Arizona and Louisville. Loser, adios. Winner gets to play another day. Arizona right now around a minus -$1.45 favorite. Total sitting at 10.5. Anything that you're looking at here in the opening game, which will start at around 2:00 Eastern time, Arizona and Louisville?
Yeah, I really like this under. Again, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but you've got Smith Bailey going up against Ethan Eberle. Ethan Eberle's a lefty. Arizona struggles to hit lefties. Smith Bailey is a true freshman, has some really good stuff. He's been really impressive this season. We know Louisville's bullpen is the worst in this field. I lean Arizona. I actually think there's a lot of value on them. They opened up, I think, split 115 both ways. Have not bet that side yet. The first thing I bet was the under, but I do think Arizona gets by. Our projections have this minus 218 in favor of Arizona, so a ton of value on the Wildcats. The problem, and the reason I haven't bet it yet, is I spoke to a guy that covers Arizona baseball, and when he told me that Arizona or that Louisville was starting Ethan Eberle, he looked at me, shook his head, and said, "We can't hit lefties." So when one guy that covers them closely looks at you and tells you that, he's afraid that they're going 0-2. do you really want to get behind him? I think I will end up getting on him. I think there's too much value. We saw him show a lot of fight against Coastal in that game one. I think the Wildcats should be fine.
Yeah, you're starting to see the market get hit with Arizona money. Circa just went to minus 148 on the money line. DraftKings and the Westgate Superbook now to minus 145. Before we look ahead to tomorrow, just to sum up what you're looking at for today. So you've got Oregon State on the run line +1.5, and you're maybe looking at Arizona. Is that the bets that you've got in the hopper for today's two games?
Yes, and then the under. I think I've got under 9.5 in the Arizona-Louisville game.
All right, there we go. That is 10.5 now, if you want to take the total there. Looking ahead to tomorrow, UCLA-LSU, the total just popped 9.5, minus 115 both ways at DraftKings, and LSU a minus 280 favorite. Your Hogs are a massive favorite tomorrow, sitting at minus $5. If you want to take Murray State on the run line, you can get +3.5 runs at plus 105, total 10.5. We got about a minute here or so. Anything initially jump out to you for tomorrow's games?
I feel like the number one square play, which squares win, it's going to be a money line parlay of Arkansas and LSU. I think it'll knock it down to about minus 150. There's always that option. I do feel like those are the best two teams. They both should advance through this. But Murray State getting +3.5. If that goes to +4.5, I'm going to have to be on the Racers. They covered for me with a +2.5 the other night. I love this team. I love the offense. And we've seen Arkansas's offense kind of fall into a lull. If you get 4.5 runs with the Racers, I think the Razorbacks win. But I think the Racers could cover that run line. And for as far as the total goes, complete stay away from me. I either think Arkansas's offense can explode or they win this game 4-2. Have no read either way. And then kind of the same for UCLA, LSU. I don't think Anthony Einson is going to be very hittable, but depending on if UCLA starts Landon Stump or Ian May, I think LSU's bats could really wake up. You know, Jared Jones, one of the best hitters in the country, goes 0-for-5 with 5 strikeouts last night. Just gets embarrassed by Arkansas's pitching staff. So I think the offense for LSU probably wakes up, but I still don't think it would go over that 9.5.
He's Matt Grissom, always joining us courtesy of our Progressive guest line. Hey, folks, if you're looking to play Circa Survivor or Circa Millions for free this season, how about the giveaway? They're giving away one free $1,000 entry to both their Circa contests and full proxy service. Head on over to winnercircleproxy.com/VSIN.
You're tuned in to the VSIN Weekend Morning Line.
It is the VSIN Weekend Morning Line here on this Sunday morning. Happy Father's Day to all. Live from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas, we'll give out some best bets of what we heard throughout the show regarding the U.S. Open, regarding the College World Series today and tomorrow, and maybe some NBA Finals plays as well. But I say happy Father's Day to my next guest, father of two. Jonathan Von Tobel joins us right now, courtesy of our Progressive guest line. And I can imagine he would think of no better way to spend 10 minutes on a Father's Day than talking with me. So what's up, JVT? Welcome back from Omaha.
Yep, thank you very much. Got back yesterday. But in true Father's Day fashion, as I was telling my wife, not only am I on with you, I just got done. If people would like to check it out, I am filling in for Adam Burke in the MLB side of things this week and next week. So we have a Sunday night MLB preview up on the website, courtesy of me, previewing Giants and Dodgers as well. So it's been a very busy morning, all, of course, involving work, Tim, on Father's Day. No other way to spend it, right?
Well, and Sham Sharania added to your workload as find out of the blockbuster deal that the Orlando Magic have shipped off 4 first-round picks, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony for Desmond Bane. So I know this is fresh. It's just coming out. I'm sure you're going to really dive into it. But just initial thoughts of this move. We'll start with Orlando to go out and get one of the best three-point shooters in the game to pair up with their young core.
Yeah, I think there's no really other way to put it than it is an overpay, the, what Orlando's doing here. The question I think initially was just like, what's the degree of the overpay? Because my initial thought was like, all right, like four first round picks, but from a team that is probably going to be relatively competitive in the Eastern Conference over the next few years, right? So it's not like this should be some first round picks that are falling inside of the lottery if things are going right for Orlando. But among those first round picks is a 2026 Phoenix first round pick. So that's next year. That could be a pretty decent first round pick. Then you're talking about three other firsts and a swap as well. KCP, I think, is kind of moot. He didn't really perform very well last year. He's a okay player, but he's kind of on the decline, one would think. And then Cole Anthony is a guy that can come off the bench, play good minutes. Maybe if he gets some starters minutes, he becomes a starting player in the NBA, but it's nothing like crazy for Memphis. But I think initially my first thought was, all right, overpay, but not too bad. But the more details we got on it, especially with that 2026 Phoenix first round pick, I think we're just straight in overpay mode. Look, I think Orlando desperately needed some more offense, but I thought, and I was texting with Kelly Bidlin and Zach Cohen, and Zach, I'm sure, is going to have something on the website here pretty soon, if not already, about this trade, where I thought the help that Orlando needed wasn't just strictly offense, Tim. It was in the form of shot creation, right? Like a playmaker, a guy who can create for himself and others and get this offense, which was one of the worst in the NBA, really out of the mud, especially in their half court setting. And Desmond Bane is good. He's a good shooter. You mentioned the shooting struggles for Orlando. He is going to help them in that regard. But I don't think he really quells all of the issues this team's going to have offensively. So I think it's stuck in the overpay, but he's going to fit with them, and I think they're going to be a little bit better on offense. So we'll see how it happens, but I think it's a little much for what Desmond Bane brings to the table.
You know, it's funny because obviously our eyes are going to gravitate towards Orlando and making this move, right? They get the big piece. This was an Orlando team, young and exciting, 41-41. They were in the play-in tournament. It's not like Memphis is a bunch of bums, right? 48-34 a year ago, only two games back of the Lakers for the three spot. But as the season went on, injuries to Ja, all of that. So what do you make of Memphis moving forward? Obviously, one of their key cogs is now gone. But, you know, I do a little bit of Memphis radio, and the folks that I'm texting with now said, you know, it's not that bad of a deal. And they think maybe this is a deal to make another deal potentially for Memphis. It doesn't feel like, to them at least, JVT, that this is a sign, hey, wholesale sale, we're selling off everybody. Ja Morant's next to go.
Well, then you might not want to listen to Brian Windhorst because he's making it seem like this might be
really the
fire sale. Now, that doesn't mean maybe that Ja's going to go anywhere, right? I mean, because here's the thing. I don't know how much they talk about this in Memphis. You have a good tune for it, but Ja Morant is a good and fine player. Ja Morant has also barely played 56% of his games since his rookie year. Morant has not been very available, whether it be injury or off-court issues. Morant is a guy who is not a particularly great defensive player, as we know. And they're actually, and Tim, he's actually one of the more overrated half-court players in the NBA. I actually don't think he's really particularly great, given his reputation for how they play when they're playing against set defenses. So, like, he's a good and fine player, but I don't even think you're shipping him off really for much, given what his reputation is. So maybe this is part of a fire sale of building around John getting more. I don't know if Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to be gone next, but, like, one would think you can go one of two ways. Like you're referring to, you now have four first-round picks. You now have a first-round pick in this draft, which is a good thing. So maybe you're going to use that, move up, try to get some of these young studs near the top of the NBA draft coming up. Or maybe this is the start of acquiring assets and really trying to ship off the whole thing. So we'll see what happens, but you can go one of two directions now if you're Memphis. And the wording from one Brian Windhorst over at ESPN did make it seem that maybe the direction they were taking wasn't so much retooling, but maybe rebuilding.
Yeah, so we will see how this offseason plays out. An offseason that many are expecting it to be a lot of fireworks out there. So we'll see ultimately how that all plays out. We still have a season, though. 2-2 is the series heading back to Oklahoma City as OKC comes back, clamps down defensively in that fourth quarter, JVT. So here we go again. Point spreads 9.5 tomorrow night. We've seen the total dip down to 224 after another under. Feel heading into tomorrow, side and total, anything you're looking to put in the account for game five?
I mean, I don't know about you. This series has been weird. Like, you talk about feel. Look, all you need to do, Tim, is what do we talk about all the time? Just bet the zigzag. You are now 3-0 in this series, just betting the straight-up loser in the next game. You are hitting at a 66% clip, betting these straight-up losers in this postseason. Why do you need us to say anything? Why do we need to analyze anything? That's just the easy thing to do. And look, the market's factoring this in. Tim, in game two, we closed 11.5, right? Game one, some spots closed 10, 10.5. And here we are, right back to that opening number for game game one. Why is it watered down? Because Indiana lost the last game and they didn't cover. So, of course, this is going to be a spot where they come in and stay inside of this number. Look, I will say this. I think that there has been a constant in three of the four games now for Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City has shut down Indiana's offense for three of the four games we have seen. They have shut them down in transition for three of the four games that we have seen. The outlier so far in this series is game three, where Indiana came out, had a very good offensive showing, shot 52% from the floor. By the way, I think it was the third or second worst field goal percentage that a team has had against Oklahoma City so far in this postseason. The constant thread has been OKC has defended Indiana well. So if you're rolling with the cliche of role players play better at home than on the road, why would I not expect that yet again here, coming back to game, at least coming back to Oklahoma City, that OKC is going to be able to do the same thing? Would very much lean a little bit toward under the total, Tim. Also would look at potentially playing Tyrese Halliburton's assists under as well. Back at OKC in the two games in this series, he went under his assist prop because the assist opportunities weren't there. And I think that's something that is viable here. Buying in on anything Thunder defense, right? Anything that ties from that and how well that can perform, I think that is a safe way to go for this series because that has been a constant threat for this team, and they have been consistently good on that end, even though they are 2-2 in this series.
You and I always talk about, and it's not rocket science, but, you know, buying low, right? So we just saw SGA, 35 points, but zero assists. Prior to that, in game three, three assists. So the total, so the market has adjusted, right? It's sitting at 6.5 right now at DraftKings. But my question to you would be this. It does feel like at least Mark Daigneault in game four, right, said, all right, he's not going to bring the ball up. We're going to rest him a little bit more. We're going to try to save that gas for the fourth quarter, which worked out perfectly, and he went for 15 points. Do we think it's more of the same from a less facilitating, go-get-buckets type of mindset in game number five tomorrow night for SGA?
I mean, I think you could, because here's the thing too, because your market adjustments, right? The Halliburton's actually a good example of that as well. Halliburton's assist prop got up to 8.5 by the time we got to game four, and then he stays under that total, right? So again, kind of buying on these highs and lows, it would make some sense. Part of the game plan, it's a good observation by you, has been, all right, like they're working this dude. Let's just get the ball out of his hands. That means fewer assist opportunities. But I think back at home, you're going to be able to get what you want a little bit more here. And thus, maybe those assist opportunities with a lower number are going to go there. I am kind of hoping that's the case. This assist market in terms of series leader is still kind of up for the grabs, if you will. But Tyrese Halliburton has had a big lead. So if you get those two guys to pass and you're like ships in the night, maybe you're going to have a little bit of a chance here. So I would tend to agree with that. Or what's going to be interesting is, Tim, some markets hang up like head-to-heads, right, in series stats leaders or something like that. So like for the game, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander taking the points in a matchup with Halliburton in terms of total assists would also be something worth looking at.
By the way, Alex Caruso, I don't know what it was prior in the series. Yep. His point total now 10.5 after he's had multiple 20-point
games. How about our own Mitch Moss? We were talking about this in Omaha. He has a 460-1 finals MVP ticket on Alex Caruso.
It's not terrible.
And as I told him, hey, look, it's not 460-1. I'll tell you that. Like, he got a good number on it.
Look, I mean, Andre Iguodala should have never won the MVP in 2016, but he did because of a narrative, right? So Alex Caruso, two 20-point games, getting interviewed post-game on set with SVP. There's worse bets to have made, I would say, in your life. JVT, 100%. Always appreciate it, man. Check out JVT's write-up over at VSiN.com for tonight's baseball card as well. Happy Father's Day, brother.
Happy Father's Day to you and everybody else. Thank you.
There he is, JVT joining us. Hey, just a reminder, folks, if you want to bet smarter this NFL season, well, guess what? You want to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. $199, the offer we're offering you for the full year, already discounted there. Plus, you get the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook. The promo code is BOOK, VSiN.com/subscribe. Promo code BOOK.
VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Putting a bow on the show, it is the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. I'm Tim Murray, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Final round of the U.S. Open underway, and we will see the likes of Sam Burns out there in a little over an hour. Adam Scott, J.J. Spahn, Victor Hovland. We'll get to our best bets here in just a moment as well, as it is, of course, a busy day today. No NBA Finals, no Stanley Cup final last night. The Florida Panthers taking a 3-2 series lead as that series heads back down to Sunrise, Florida. And the Florida Panthers, as we look at the market for Game 6, a pretty decent favorite to take care of business as they are now a minus 143 favorite here at Circa to win Game number 6. Do you dare go under? 5-0 to the over so far in this Stanley Cup final. It is juiced under at most shops, depending on where you look, either minus 115 or out to minus 120 for tomorrow night. So plenty of discussion on Game 6 as the week goes on, as Florida and Edmonton will hit the ice on Tuesday night, and we will see if indeed that is the finale or if, like last year, we will get a Game 7, Florida winning on their home ice a year ago. They'll try to do the same here tonight as well. So best bets coming up here in just a matter of moment, recapping what we heard from Jimmy Ott and Matt Grissom on some of their plays for college baseball, what Wes Reynolds is looking at from the U.S. Open final round. Today in the Major League Baseball, a couple of interesting things to keep an eye on there as the New York Yankees trying to avoid a sweep at the hands of the Boston Red Sox. The Red Sox holding on last night and beating the Yankees 4-3. And the slump buster Max Fried takes the hill. So they are a minus 180 favorite are the New York Yankees. First pitch at Fenway Park at 1:35 this afternoon. Also at 1:35 in the nation's capital, it is the Nationals and the Marlins. And normally, would we talk about Nats and Marlins? Probably not. But Mackenzie Gore is on the hill. He is the leader in strikeouts in the National League heading into this game. And with a good game today, he would jump back into the leader over Garrett Crochet for all of Major League Baseball in strikeouts. Mackenzie Gore, part of that Juan Soto trade that has really helped out the Nationals franchise to a point. But right now, the Nationals are riding a 7-game losing streak, and they are a season worst, 10 games under 500. Davey Martinez, I don't know if you caught this last night, because let's be honest, it was a Nationals-Marlins game in which the Nationals lost, and there were a lot of other things going on in the world of sports, including an epic comeback by the Diamondbacks, you know, College World Series, Stanley Cup, etc., and the Nationals losing their seventh straight, probably not on your radar. But the reason I want to bring it up is I just want to play you this clip from Nats manager Davey Martinez. And look, full disclosure, I'm a Nats fan. Davey Martinez, I will always be indebted to you, sir, for the 2019 season. But it almost felt like what we heard from him yesterday was a manager be like, yeah, I'm probably going to get fired here soon. So this was Davey Martinez. You're going to hear the question first, and then his response to the criticism on whether it should be on the coaches or the players for this 7-game losing streak the Nationals are in the midst of. Here's Davey Martinez, a Q&A yesterday following the Nats' loss against the Marlins.
When you look at the offense as a whole, I think you guys produced what you wanted to this month. For you, how much of that is on the players, on coaching?
Never on coaching. Okay, coaches work their asses off every single day. You know, we're not going to finger point here and say it's coaches. It's never on the coaches. Okay, they work hard. The message is clear. All the work is done prior. Sometimes they got to go out there and they got to play the game. You know, it's always been about the players. Always. You know, I played this game a long time. Never once have I blamed the coach for anything. I mean, we worked our asses off to get better. They gave us information and we used it. These guys understand what the game is, man. These coaches, I never had such a group of coaches that worked as hard as they do. I mean, they're here freaking the digitally. They go over everything. They sit players every day. These coaches, they work their asses off. So, and I know every coach's staff is like that. So, sometimes, and the players don't. Sometimes, you got to put the onus on the players. They got to go out there, and they got to play the game and play the game the right way. We can't hit for them. We can't catch the ball for them. We can't pitch for them. We can't throw strikes for them. They got to do that.
All right. If this was a head coach in the NFL or an NBA head coach what would our response be? To a point, he's not wrong, right? At the end of the day, the players got to play and got to execute. But the Washington Nationals are in the midst of, what, a five-year rebuild? And Davey Martinez, who, once again, I'm sure you're not all too aware of his demeanor in post-game press conferences, he's usually pretty guarded. You could sense the frustration there. Is he calling out the front office? Is he calling out the ownership for not giving him better players? But as a better now, and baseball is so unique, it's not a big motivation type of sport, right? That's why analytics are so big in baseball. But is this a spot you'd want to back the Nationals today? Now, they're the favorite, Mackenzie Gore on the hill. They have not done a great job giving Mackenzie Gore much run support at all, as he's got a 2.8 ERA, and he's just, what, 3-5, I think, on the year. That's why wins are stupid when it comes to starting pitchers. He was asked this morning about it because they're about to get underway, and he said the response was, quote, great. I talked to them a lot already. Hey, it wasn't on them, right? My comments was nothing about them. They know that. They read through it. Like I said, I talked to them about it, and they're all good. They want to win today. I mean, it was kind of about them. I get it. You were defending your coaches. Maybe you saw the writing that your coaches were probably going to be fired. I don't know. Maybe you're going to get fired. It's kind of about the players, though, to say it wasn't about them. And then he said, to sum it up, if it wasn't about them, who was it about, was the question. They asked me about the coaches. Do you put the blame on the coaches? No, I don't. Well, they asked if it was the players or the coaches. And you said, it's never the coaches. We'll see how it all plays out today there. But I had to play that for you. Nationals trying to snap a 7-game losing streak. They've got their ace on the hill, Mackenzie Gore, who is legit good. He is an all-star caliber starting pitcher. So we'll see how they respond today. He actually did go under his strikeout prop last start out. So we'll see if he is able to put up some big strikeout numbers today against the Miami Marlins. His strikeout prop heading into today is 7.5 juiced under. Oof, that is a big old number for Mackenzie Gore, who is second in Major League Baseball in strikeouts. All right, let's get to our best bets, as we like to do here on the show. It's kind of an aggregate of all the plays that have been handed out here on the show. We'll start with the recommendation from Wes Reynolds, and I went ahead and tailed it as well. Taking Victor Hovland at 6-1 to win the U.S. Open. He's 3 strokes back. As we mentioned, history tells us that if you're going into the final round of the U.S. Open with just a 1-stroke lead, probably not going to win it. Only 32% of the time they have come home to win it. So history not necessarily on the side of San Burns, but as talking to Wes Reynolds, he felt like at this point, 3 strokes back, Victor Hovland would be the best look there from a futures standpoint. And then elsewhere, Jimmy Ott on the show likes under tonight in Coastal Carolina, Oregon State. That price right now is -110, I believe, at DraftKings. I don't think it has shifted in that direction just yet. And also, Jimmy does like for tomorrow the under in UCLA LSU. That has now moved to -120, so under 9.5 tomorrow. So two plays for Jimmy Ott. Likes Oregon State, Coastal Carolina under 9. He also does like the Shants to win the game against Oregon State. And then tomorrow, he likes UCLA, LSU under. Matt Grissom, his play today, he likes Oregon State on the run line, +1.5 against Coastal Carolina. Hey, folks, as always, our best bets brought to you by our friends over at GBank, and they're introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you need to do is open up a GBank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days, deposit, and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cash back rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match. VSiN completes that trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through October 31st. That's a $200 value right there. So the $500 trifecta, folks, from GBank, First Bank, and VSiN. Head on over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. All right, that's going to do it for our show. Thanks to everyone behind the scenes, producer Justin. Up next is Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.